global vice chair in real life and head of a professional practice group for Ernst & Young. She's a senior advisor to the Boston Consulting Group's Audit and Risk Committee. She received her Bachelor of Science in Accountancy from the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. And then we have Tom Tully, Sports General Counsel, David Gabor, he's a partner at the Wagner Law Group in Boston, and his specialty area is employment law and human resources consulting. David's legal experience includes both Massachusetts and in New York State as well. He was named a 2017 Massachusetts Super Lawyer and is on the board of directors of the Massachusetts Educational Foundation. He received his JD from the Jacob Fuchsberg Law Center at Touro College and a BA from the University of Michigan. And David is open to your asking him after the presentation is over all about his aunt, Jaja Gabor. Tom Tully, Larry Stiebel, is Vice President of Board Options and Stiebel Peabody and Associates. Areas of expertise revolve around retained search, leadership development, and executive outplacement. He and Marianne Peabody, me, are co-authors of Navigating the Waterfall, A Guide for Leadership and Career Management in the 21st Century, which is an ebook on Amazon. Larry's also an adjunct lecturer in leadership at the DeMore McKim Business School at Northeastern University. He received his doctorate in psychology from Harvard University and is licensed as a psychologist at the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. He's been on the board of a venture-backed tech company in the human resource IS space and the National Association of Corporate Directors, New England chapter.
Well, I'd like to welcome the board today to our meeting. And Tom Tully has asked to speak to the board, and then he will excuse himself and we'll go on with the board's business. So, Tom?
Thank you, Karen. I've been mindful about this week being Roseanne Barr's decision to tweets and CBS's reaction to Roseanne Barr. So it's a sensitive time for me. I'm still trying to figure out what happened. I lost track of people's pain. I feel terrible about that. There were people who were hurt. I was not tuned in enough to know how my behavior was affecting them and how it affected some of my colleagues. That is on me. I never thought of my behavior as bullying. I was growing revenue for shareholders. I was creating jobs for local communities. I was providing great products to our customers. I always wanted to set the bar high. I was always thinking in terms of excellence. And of course, I am competitive. A few times over the years, my behavior's impact was raised to me, but never in a way that it broke through to me, and never in a way that led to change. Part of it in different times, I don't think people would have batted an eye, but times have changed, people's expectations have changed. I've been hit on the side of the head by a 2x4. I'm ready to change too. I must note there were people who thrived under my leadership. I'm incredibly proud of the company we built. All these reports that you've been hearing about are the views of the people that complained. But there's a bigger universe. It's not like it was all so bad. To every single person who built Tom Tully Sports, I want to say, it's been an honor to work alongside you. To those of you who've gone on to great things, I'm proud of you. To those of you who continue to thrive at Tom Tully, I want to take joy in that. And to those who feel hurt, I deeply regret what I've done. I am truly sorry for what I've done. I'm chastened, I've been smacked wide. I want to do the right thing by the shareholders, by the employees, and by our customers. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks very much for your comments. So as a board, I want to first do some level setting so that everybody has the same facts as they have emerged. You are aware that there have been some formal complaints about behavior, creating a hostile work environment. Some of those, and as the head of human resources and external counsel have investigated those matters, more information has come to light, which I only just became aware of through this, through the investigation. So we have inappropriate comments being made to employees for sure, related to race, ethnicity, and sexual orientation. These are protected classes, as you know, under the law. And so this is very difficult for me to hear, and I think for all of you as board members. Also, there has been a clear indication of bullying and verbal harassment by employees. And some have gone so far as to suggest that the answer to anybody that Tom disagrees with is we should fire them. I think we've also begun to focus a little bit more, or I have as the board chair, on turnover. And the turnover is higher than our competitors in certain groups, particularly those folks that report directly to Tom. And we have had numerous heads of HR, numerous COOs, numerous CFOs in pretty short order, which is not helpful to what I would call the long-term sustainability of our organization. So the issue, I think, in front of us is these are distractions. These kinds of challenges are distractions to the business. They can damage our reputation and our brand. We are a consumer business. We serve the consumers. And it's affecting our ability to both hire and retain talent in an environment where retaining talent is extremely critical. So I think we have to turn to solutions and what do we do, which we could range everything from Tom doesn't stay, or obviously in listening to Tom, his desire, his expressed desire in talking to us about changing his behavior and whether that is viable. And so I personally see the status quo is not an option. We cannot allow this to continue given the fact that the behaviors are not acceptable and could border on illegal. Probably do, right?
They do. What he has done has violated the law in Massachusetts. He's violated Title VII, probably the ADA and ADEA. He's retaliated against people, and we do have real exposure. So if we let him go, we probably will face some litigation and competition. That's a risk. If he stays, how can we have him stay and minimize risk? Is there anybody here who would be interested in finding a way so that he can continue to work with the company and maybe come up with some way to minimize the risk?
Yeah, can we just, I feel like we're being railroaded to a solution.
Yeah.
Can we step back?
Absolutely, yeah, we should. Everybody's opinion is very
important. I sort of feel like you guys are offering this solution over here. And so if I understand you correctly, there's only been one actual complaint filed.
One formal complaint.
One complaint. Realizing that there's been bad behavior that has anecdotally come out through a lot of people. And I think that's where you're coming out with these comments. Because the one complaint didn't, the result wasn't, disproved that there was a problem. I mean, it said there were no allegations of sexual harassment.
No, there's been no allegations of sexual harassment. They are harassment, bullying, and hostile work, creating a hostile work environment.
There is a second issue.
We have an individual who is the face of the company, founded it. He's done a lot of good things to the company, and it sounds like he's willing to change. Now, maybe he can, maybe he can't, but why wouldn't we at least give him a shot at changing?
If he stays and he continues to do what he's done, for example, trying to fire the head of HR because she brought in an outside attorney to investigate a complaint of discrimination, if he does do that again, we are on notice of his prior bad behavior. And a second time around, we'd be facing huge punitive damages.
So why not then make him go through, he said he's willing to do sensitivity training, have him do sensitivity training, sure he knows things that would cause him to get fired down the road.
Yeah.
Be very clear with him.
I think
all I'm saying is that I feel like we're getting railroaded into.
No, I don't think we're trying to, we're not trying to, I think we have to look at options, but options mean there's more than one choice.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I want to make sure we get other feedback from board members.
I'm not at the option stage. I like to ask some questions about due diligence.
Sure.
And I know this is a thin case, so I won't press this issue, but what type of documentation do we have that the board can review that talks about the details of these issues? So I'm not so much trying to determine what's going on. I'm trying to determine what type of facts that we can bring to the table so we can make a reasonable decision.
Yeah, I think that obviously council conducted an investigation, so council can report the findings, but I mean, we're not gonna provide every detail of every inquiry that was made, but that's why we have council to conduct the investigation.
And we brought in an outside law firm to do the investigation of the complaint by Ms. Hahn, and we brought them in to avoid any kind of a conflict of interest in the investigation. And they've confirmed the statements were made. And they also confirmed that he wanted to fire the head of HR because she brought in an outside law firm to look into it. So we've got the complaints with Ms. Hahn, and then we've got retaliation against the head of HR. So those two are clear concerns. Those are the only two clear concerns we have. We have not yet investigated why there's been so much turnover at the C-suite level, and whether that is also the product of any bullying or harassment in the past.
So, my question is, and then just maybe here, do we know the sort of exact timing for what our IPO is? How long do we need to fix this problem for, I guess?
Well, I think we, well, obviously as an organization, we have talked about an IPO or a sale. I don't think that's the motivating factor. I think we have to address the issue we have as an organization with the CEO and what those issues should be, because we need the organization to be sustainable and resilient into the future, right? So it's not just about, you know, when are we going to have our exit strategy? I think we have to deal with, you know, how do we as an organization have so much dependent on one person, and how we can craft a path forward, whatever that might be. And I know one of our board members has a comment.
Yeah, so this board member happened to have a sick aunt last time, and I missed the last board meeting, and I apologize. What was done to prepare the board members for this meeting and
nothing,
letting us know that this was a topic that we were going to be discussing?
Nothing.
First of all, I hope your aunt's feeling better.
Thank you.
But we didn't want people to prejudge what we're doing, and we're not trying to railroad, going back to Ellen's comment, we're not looking to railroad anybody. But we can't bury our heads in the sand and make believe we don't have a problem, because any decision we make comes with risk. The question is, which can
right,
we tolerate?
I haven't heard anybody say that bearing, we're not gonna act like we don't have a problem. We're just trying to do due diligence, to use John's term, find out what is going on.
Right.
So nothing went on last board meeting.
No. And the board is responsible, as you all know, for really increasingly more so about culture, the culture of the organization. And so I had no knowledge of this, and obviously neither did any of you to my knowledge, until the formal complaint was filed and then the investigation was conducted. So it is new information. It is obviously challenging information for us to deal with, and I think we just have to.
Okay. And just one clarifying point. This is a Texas company. Not to say that this behavior is more acceptable in Texas than Massachusetts, but there might be some different guidelines. But I still think the basic issue is the same.
Yeah. Well, the federal law would be the Trump.
Right.
I want to let some of the other board members who haven't spoken, because we need all viewpoints to come forward.
There was some great points that the chair just made about the concentration of risk behind the head of the company, literally his face on the logo. So he is the company. I would suggest that those are important decisions for the board, or important issues for the board to discuss. I would recommend, however, that we not merge the two. There was an incident and a complaint. Laws have been broken, or so we're being told by counsel. And so we have an obligation, given that it's the CEO, and that's one of our key responsibilities as a board, is the CEO's role, an ongoing role or not. So my recommendation would be, you've raised some important topics, that we table those and not merge the two.
Sure. I think, but you know, we are where we are, right? So we have to address what we have in front of us and think about, again, I'm thinking about sustainability and resilience of the organization. So, and I think there was some comments from other board members. Yeah.
Two things come to mind kind of in response to Loretta. One is it would be helpful for me to try to have a conversation about what types of risk are we facing if we keep him around, particularly as it relates to that we haven't investigated any of the other turnover, and we did see that there was turnover. Uh-huh. So that's a little bit on us. And then the second question would be about resilience and how do we make this more resilient and think through some of those things about brand and culture and right. what we want going forward.
Right, I mean, in terms
regardless of what we decide.
Yeah,
here.
In terms of risks, I'll just state them as I see them. I mean, obviously we have the existing risk of our workforce who's you know, is commenting that or at least claiming that there's a hostile environment. We have, if we, depending on the actions we take as a board or suggest to take as a board, you know, we may face different kinds of risk. We may face, you know, brand risk. We may face if Tom leaves of his own volition or because he is asked to leave or we separate him, we will face when his, you know, non-compete runs out, he can start another company just like what we have here. So again, that goes to our own resilience. You know, financial risks, the timing of exit strategies could be, you know, significantly changed. But we also have the ability to hire. If we, you know, is this going to affect our ability to hire? I mean, social media could take over, and overtake this kind of stuff. We see it with very strong companies and their brands. So I know.
Can I ask one other follow-on question related to the general counsel? Does our risk, our financial and liability risk, increase here, knowing that because we know that we have a problem in that next instance as we discover either other problems or there's a new problem? Is there
a
substantial increase?
Every day he continues to work, and if we don't act one way or another, we have a risk of another complaint of harassment, bullying, discrimination, retaliation. And because we already are on notice, punitive damages, publicity, brand awareness, that all, you know, the risk
so there
increases.
Are punitive.
But if we do keep them, and if we go down that road, then I think we've got to do a couple of things. One is think about ways to better train our employees that the employees come forward and give them a voice at the same
right.
time.
Right.
At the same time we do that, and if he goes through whatever kind of behavioral program and counseling and training, maybe we need to incentivize him.
Yeah, I agree with counsel's views that as I've been thinking about perhaps the range of alternatives, if we believe as a board that the best option is that he stay, we are on notice about behavior and therefore we have to take very strong action and have to have very strong monitoring that those actions are having the desired effect. And I think that would, you know, include, because maybe the incentives to Tom are not focused on the right thing. If suddenly the incentives were about reducing turnover or, you know, our results from Glassdoor, how those things look, that could be, you know, that could be a motivator potentially. But I don't know. We don't know that he can change. So, and I think you had some comments, Tom.
You mentioned media and wearing my media hat. We need a media strategy immediately. We need a spokesperson, especially since my understanding is this story has already hit the Wall Street Journal. On the company and on Tom. Mm-hmm. And we need a spokesperson to do essentially holding statements, and that if Tom were to stay, or whoever is going to take that slot, we need someone to go out and humbly answer every single question. That's not going to be easy, and not having the strategy could be very costly. As a board member, though, in the broader picture, it seems to me that, you know, there have been a lot of narcissistic, egotistical CEOs out there. Steve Jobs and Jack Welch and Carly Fiorina, what was her name? Ann Winter of Vogue, Devil Wears Prada. You know, we have a president who could be in that category. And I ran across a very interesting quote in Forbes magazine about founding CEOs. It said, you may not want to hear this, but dysfunctional control freaks with enormous egos and bad tempers make great founders. Some of them the best, actually.
Founders, but not necessarily the long-term CEOs.
Well, that may be our broader discussion. Is Tom our future CEO? He has obviously been a successful founding CEO.
Sure.
Is it time? I would question, going back to Title VII, my understanding from counsel is that hostile work environment is when you are being discriminated against based on protected class. So your argument is that in this case, race is the protected class?
And sexual orientation.
And our exposure.
Correct. Okay. He made racist comments and he also retaliated. Retaliation is a separate situation and we clearly have that concern. Now going back to communication, whatever we do, I think we also need to communicate properly to our employees.
Sure. All stakeholders.
I mean, we want this to be a culture of excellence.
Well, I would just add one more quick comment. Okay. I would add that I believe this company is taking a huge risk, given Tom's profile, the fact that he's on videos at every location, welcoming people into the location, and so on. I think we're taking a huge risk, and we should be very careful that that risk is not going to be extremely costly.
A risk to keep him, or
a risk in talking about terminating. Mm-hmm. I think he is the face of the company.
Don't we face that same risk if we think about what happened with Harvey Weinstein? He was the face of the company, and staying was as much of a risk as leaving.
I don't think it's quite the same. George has not had an opportunity to have any input, so I want to make sure everybody's voice gets heard.
So I wanted to ask, have you considered two things? One, have you considered a middle road that he would take some type of leave of absence while he was doing his sensitivity training?
I hadn't considered that, but I think it's an interesting suggestion.
And secondly, he was very contrite in his remarks, but it's been rumored that he feels that you, Karen, have violated his trust and that you've turned against him. Is that really indicative? First of all, has he said that to you?
I've heard those rumors, but he's not said it to my face.
And is that indicative of somebody who's willing to change?
Yeah,
I would ask.
I think that's a good question. I don't know the answer. I mean, I can just tell you.
I don't think having
a complaint investigated is turning against the CEO. That's the right, we have to do the right thing. And just like all these other organizations, we cannot afford to have things, and we've not gone backwards into our files to look at old things. I know there's the other plan.
I'm thinking after listening to him, we should have two options. Number one, rather than give him something, I think one of our options should be to let him give us a plan. He's contrite, he's looking at situations. I believe that he is contrite. So the first option is, let's find out what he's doing. Let's not try to make up a decision and see what his plan looks like. And then the second plan is—
A plan to fix it.
In other words, let's not prejudge him. I mean,
this is a
human being in a situation where he's trying to fix this. And I think we owe it to him to say, well, what's your plan? And then I think the second thing is, we need to have a plan in case his plan is not a good plan.
I like it.
Well, I think I like the idea of putting this back to Tom because it is, he considers this company his baby.
Yes.
And, nobody has an ugly baby. So, but he has to come to terms with his behavior. And I think his plan has to address that and be robust.
And we can do that, but we didn't say that we had to accept his plan.
No, I understand.
But I think we put ourselves at risk of treating him like like he's treating his employees if we don't at least allow him some notion of.
I agree.
Let's allow you to do that. And it could be a teachable moment, a small teachable moment.
Right.
Where he can see that this is the type of behavior we want to take and reinforce.
Right, to change it, but we need fundamentals. Is there agreement that we need fundamental change?
He's got to change.
In his behavior, yes.
Just a quick additional thought. We share, as a board, we share some responsibility. If we didn't know this, at least some of this, we should have.
Right, we have failed in our job.
I think the other example is Uber.
Pardon me?
Uber is another thing that we might look to.
And American.
Where the feeling was that the board didn't take strong enough action at the first incident, and the second incident was more damaging to the value of the company. And so we want to keep that in mind as we go through these decision processes.
Is he due to come back?
But I really like, I want to come back to the suggestion over here, because I think that was actually a suggestion by my colleague over here that says, look, in a perfect world, I want him to stay for all the reasons that Tom mentioned and have been mentioned before, right? But I think we have consensus that he needs to change his behavior.
Correct.
So how do we get there and succeed in both? And I think your suggestion of one, asking him to come up with a robust plan of how is he going to change, maybe it's sensitivity training, maybe it's a lot of different choices, right?
Including timelines and KPIs.
And then the second thing is, I do agree, we need to figure out what our plan is if for some reason he doesn't come back with a robust plan. The goal is behavioral change.
Yeah, and I think we need to do the second one no matter what, because we have a risk, as has been pointed out,
absolutely,
in various ways.
Absolutely.
And we are vulnerable, and so we have to address our vulnerability.
Are we going to bring him back in now?
Yeah, I think
so. With that first one, do you provide any directives beyond behavior that he should also address within those KPIs? Should we think about brand resilience and risk if he finds himself unable to follow through? Should he contemplate those things in his plan?
Well, by the way, all of that goes into the second plan. I'm trying to keep it short, because I don't speak too long. That's the plan that the board's going to come with.
Okay.
But think about this, if this is real life, and this person is hanging out there, and he's done some bad things, and then we come around and get the ruler and whack him over the knuckles with our ruler, I'm going, even at a minimum, even if we don't accept it, we owe it to him to take it and give him a chance to do this. Our plan is going to be robust, and we have to move as a board.
Right.
But I don't see why we have to take and drag it behind the truck to take it and get this done.
I agree with that.
That's the only thing I'm saying.
One last quick question, which is if we agree he's contrite, he wants to stay, he's willing to do whatever it takes, if we say, okay, we're going to get your plan, the plan has to have these parameters, you can stay, are we in a position legally where we could even say to him, if there is a second instance, not only will this be the last instance, we will expect you to go quietly?
Yes, what I was going to say on that is, it's called a last chance agreement.
Mm-hmm.
It's an agreement that says,
last chance agreement.
We have these 5 points, 6 points, 7 points, whatever it is. If you follow all of those, you continue to work here. If you fail to do it, this is what it looks like.
Yep.
And we would do an agreement like that.
And I think we have to be cognizant of the fact that if he comes back and if he's able to change things around, we still have a risk that he's the face of the company, and that might have some reputational risk that exists.
And
that's a second issue.
Longer-term conversation.
We need a PR and a crisis management.
Right.
So Karen,
on call.
Yeah.
If you were a normal employee in this company, there'd be a 3-step process. Some companies have 4-step. And what we're talking about is he will design the first step and gives him 30 days to correct his attitude or correct his behavior, et cetera. And an employee signs off on that, the HR person signs off on that. So that's in essence what you're doing there. But also somebody over here suggested bringing in from the outside sensitivity training for everybody.
Yep.
And there's law firms that have hostile environment trainers.
Yep.
They bring it in, everybody signs off that if they're have anybody curse at them, any sexual harassment, anything, they go to the VP of HR. So that's got to be part of his plan, tacked on to his plan, also that goes through. And some of this buys the company a little bit of cover, because you're taking action.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
And it's also not a public company, by the way, so it's, and forget the IPO piece, we got to get this part corrected.
Got to fix this first.
Yeah, so.
And we as a board may want to have the VP of HR report directly to a member of the board on any complaints relating to the CEO.
Yeah, we need to.
On any complaint, but not on day-to-day, because you don't want to step in his shoes and start sticking your nose in.
But we need to improve probably our reporting of, you know, employee complaints and handling them.
Does the company have an anonymous complaint line?
We need a whistleblower.
You're the chair, they put that on the list.
I got it on the list.
We should have that.
Whistleblower line needs to exist.
We need fundamental changes, yeah.
And what it does in all my public companies is, it goes to the chair of the audit committee, regardless of how small it is or how big it is.
Yes, yes.
So they see everything.
Yes.
So they're the check and balance.
One other thing, with the training, I think it's important that we need to have a presence at training, so let the employees know how important we are.
We need to go through the training ourselves, ladies and gentlemen.
Should I bring him back in?
Let's have Tom come back in, please.
I hope he doesn't glare at me. Pretty good guy.
Was he a Dallas Cowboy? Former Dallas Cowboy.
Former Dallas Cowboy.
There has to be a board member in every training session.
Yeah.
The people at this company have to see that we're engaged.
Tom, thank you for rejoining us.
That's a good idea.
It's essential.
Have a seat.
So Tom, the board's had a pretty robust discussion, and as with any board, and our board is no exception, we have different viewpoints about things, but once we coalesce, we've come to a viewpoint of what we think the next steps would be. Obviously, we, as you yourself in your own statement commented, the actions, the behaviors are not acceptable. And what we would like you to do is to develop a plan of how you will address your behaviors, whether it's training, coaching, what other kinds of things you need. We want that plan to come back to us, to the board, to be reviewed. We need fundamental change in your behavior. This cannot repeat. It cannot occur again, because the organization has to be able to, you know, has to become more resilient and sustainable. That plan needs to have actions, timelines, and KPIs that we can measure and hold you to in terms of improved performance, which we all very much hope will be accomplishable. We also, as a board, have thought about some things as an organization that we need to do. Things like, and please, other board members, hold me honest, I didn't forget anything. You know, we believe we need to increase sort of our whistleblowing, the handle of whistleblowing reports. We probably haven't paid as much attention to that as we have to some other things in the organization, and we want our employees to know that we do want to hear from them. We don't want them to be silenced on any matter that is causing discomfort or in a hostile environment. And we also think we need to be prepared with communication materials, media, and strategy response. What else did I leave out?
Training.
Well, I think what you haven't said, although it's implied, is we would like you to be successful.
Right.
We would like you to propose a plan that will enable change for yourself, and we would like to see you successful because we want you here with the change.
That will also likely include, we will also be evaluating incentives, how you're incented into the future, take us into the future in a different direction versus the current. And Craig, did you have a comment?
Well, I think the ladies over here said something about the outside training with getting.
Oh yeah, we're going to have awareness training
for everybody.
For everybody, all the employees,
including
just like Starbucks did.
Yeah. What?
And all the board's going to do it too.
That kind of training would have different components. For supervisors, we're going to train them on just what harassment is, discrimination is, but also to keep an eye open and be aware of what's happening with their subordinates. And then everyone gets training, but it's got to be a top-down buy-in. We're going to go to the trainings, Tom. We're going to introduce programs. We're going to say that we want to know if there is a concern that somebody has, and we want to say that this is a culture of respect. So part of a job requirement for you is to promote respect and tolerance.
And creating that culture.
And that's a big part of it.
Another aspect I think is important is for you to understand that this is a transition between being a founding CEO and a functioning CEO of a potentially public company. Those are two different roles. And we're very much invested in you accomplishing that, but we are concerned that it may take some achievement on your part to accomplish.
Tom?
No glaring at us.
Can we stop at this point?
Sure.
You're not blushing.
Thought I was going to have to call for the outplacement consultant. Let me react to what I'm hearing, but let me put my psychology hat on. There is an old, old, old concept that many of you may have taken when you took psychology 101, called the actor-observer effect. Ellen's nodding her head. She remembers. Some of you may have taken that. It basically says, when I do something, I attribute the cause of what I did to external factors, not internal. When you observe me, however, you attribute the cause of what I do to personality factors. And we know that personality is difficult, if not impossible, to change. So let me give you some examples. In the news, what's her name? Roseanne Barr. She puts out this ridiculous Twitter, and most people say this woman is racist. And what does she say? No, I was under the influence of Ambien.
And why?
This is classic actor-observer effect. Yeah. You are a racist, which is the personality. She says, no, I'm not. It's the Ambien. And you say, that's nonsense. Another example.
So did Santa, if you say that too.
And by the way, I checked it with a medical
source.
It is nonsense.
Yeah,
it is.
Nothing to do.
It's been used by others anyway. It's a stupid thing for her.
No, of course. But we're not talking about what is valid versus invalid, but how people perceive behavior. So let me give you another example. How many have been either on the giving end or receiving end of this kind of performance evaluation? You hear from a boss, you're not detail oriented enough. You're not enough of a team player. And the subordinate says, you don't understand about what's going on at work or about the pressures at work. And you as the boss said, well, the person's resisting, then they won't acknowledge this. This is just another actor-observer effect. Let me bring it down to literally our home. We live in a beautiful pond, 2 miles by 6 miles, looks like a lake. Half a block from our home is an inn called the Chateau.
Speakeasy.
A lot of people from the less affluent neighborhoods in Framingham and Natick, they come and that's their bar. Now, right outside the Chateau is a parking lot, and the parking lot is always full of beer bottles and garbage. And of course, for years, I have to drive by that place and I would say, poor white trash. These people are just poor white trash. They don't know any better. This is ridiculous. And then one day I say, okay, well, I'm making it an attribution about their personalities. Why don't I test it out? So I go to a hardware store. I invest $20 in a garbage can and put the garbage can in the parking lot. 24 hours later, the problem's gone. The issue was not poor white trash. The issue was there was no garbage can. Put the garbage can in, problem solved. State trait. So what you've done as a board, I think, is very commendable and unusual, but it's commendable. And that is, you're giving Tom Tully a chance. You're saying it's not your personality, but maybe we can change the contingencies of your compensation. We can make it a requirement that you do in a certain way. We're going to change, we will be responsible for the culture, but there's a thing about you can change. My experience with most boards, particularly venture capital boards and private equity boards, is they're not as smart as you. It doesn't work out this way. The attribution that is made is Karen is a micromanager. Karen will never give up control. You know, this is her business. She'll run it until she dies. She can't give up control. She withholds information from us. Nothing we can do. We have to get rid of her. When I interview a lot of these venture capital people, what I come away from is, just because you're a successful entrepreneur and know how to start a business doesn't necessarily mean you understand the dynamics of how do you manage a private equity dominated board of directors. It's not the same thing as managing your family business board of directors, which consists of your spouse and the lawyer who depends on you and the CPA that depends on you. It's different. And there's no education for that difference. So I commend you for your decision.
I would wonder, though, how much of that decision was driven by what you're going to fill people in on.
How much of
by how much of that decision was driven by what you're going to fill people in on? Ellen and I.
Oh yeah, I set up Ellen and Tom to be Tom Tully's best friend and be the advocate.
It's right there, actually, in your thing. It says two of the board members
right.
are his best
right. friend. Right. Right. And you started off before anybody else did.
And you were very subtle, too.
What'd you say?
You're very subtle about it.
Yeah, I'm real subtle.
Well, and then a couple of other people commented, then I chimed in, and I was very assertive. And we'll never know here how much of our decision was based on the fact that Ellen and I were very assertive. No one said, let's get rid of the guy. Nobody.
No, that's not true.
Well, that's not true.
I'll be more specific. Okay. What I said was, we need two options. One is, let's give him a chance to see what he wants to do.
Right.
And under the second option, the board has to have a robust plan to take it and deal with this.
Right.
And the reason that we didn't go any deeper, and I made this comment, was that I didn't want to talk long in a group like this. That's why I didn't give the additional information. I was trying to moderate how much I was going to volunteer versus how long I was going to speak. So I aired speaking short.
No, but I thought it was very clear.
I understood exactly.
Yeah, I did too.
But I think we all understood plan B was he goes because he hung himself.
But it could have easily gone the way you were going with the Uber.
Yeah, I tried to hold the hard line because it felt like this board was soft.
When I first opened, I brought up, separate him or rehabilitate him. And that's Alan jumped right in and said, "You're railroading this,
You never agreed that he was going to stay. It was the honest thing to watch.
No, we agreed that we would give him a chance
to come back. With the
plan. Nobody ever actually said, does everybody agree? And yes, we agree. That actually never got put on the table, and agreement was never verbalized.
No, we had Tom knocking at the door,
I appreciate that. We didn't take a vote on it. Yeah, it's a good point.
You never actually said, yes, we agree. Nobody ever said
that.
We
just felt it.
Right, you never did.
Well, Karen is a micromanager.
I'll say that in my little role where I was trying to be on the hard line, I was thinking to myself, I don't know that he can come back with a plan
that is
robust enough. I don't think he's capable of that.
Yeah, nor is there any discussion.
So I'm not expecting
him to.
Never underestimate the power of a human being.
That's true.
Right. I think we're disliking your role.
I'm sorry?
I'm disliking your role. You were so quick, all right, boom, we're going to get him out of here. You know, is there any other option or something like that? And I didn't get there that fast as you did. Well, that's why I interpreted your comments when you first said.
About the risk.
Yeah, it was about the risk of keeping him.
Title VII exposure.
And not being a recidivist.
Right. Now, the problem in the risk area is the risk of his leaving and the cost of the company financially would be greater than the risk of a second lawsuit for discrimination, you know, if he did make an inappropriate comment. And we could eliminate the risk of retaliation by changing the reporting structure. So the risk of a claim that is a claim of, you know, inappropriate comments, like comments to Han that you made, might be a risk of a couple of $100,000 as opposed to the risk of destroying the brand of the company. But it's a function of analyzing the different risks and making an educated decision, if this was a real board, which risk is tolerable.
But I think
and we hadn't gone backwards.
Yeah, but I think it's very hard to put, I mean, I know we have to oftentimes do this, but it's very hard to try to make it an economic decision about the risk, because, you know, you can take, you know, something that ends up in social media and you've just blown your brand, okay?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so I don't think of, like, okay, the risk of a lawsuit, that's a risk, but that's not our real risk. Our risk is brand damage, massive loss of employees, you know, those kinds of things.
And if this were a public company, it would have been a lot worse. I mean, if I were sitting in a public company boardroom, I mean, not being the friend of the founder, it would have been erring on the, we got to deal with this.
He should have gone, because when the shoe drops the second time, that's when the brand's really destroyed. It's already been in the journal. He's the face of the brand, and we didn't do anything to start to move away.
Well, going to current events, reading between the lines, I think ABC gave Roseanne, you know, chances to sort of talk to her about she was going to sign off, she wasn't going to do Twitter anymore. At least that's what I read in an article in the paper. And the reason they moved so quickly is they just...
She had her last chance.
She had her last chance.
Yeah, it was the last chance.
No, speculating.
Yeah, speculating. But there was something in the articles that they talked about this, they talked to her, they realized they were taking a risk when they
brought the show back. But they had delivered her a guidance of what she was not allowed to do.
We're speculating, right?
Yeah, no, it was kind of between the lines. And that's why they moved so quickly.
I have a question in terms of your reaction. If the allegation wasn't a couple of racist comments, or, you know, as in this scenario, but it was actually sexual harassment,
oh, he would have been gone.
He'd be gone.
Gone.
I found that.
Yeah, I was surprised that we
interesting
didn't take
because
a hard line.
Bullying
same type of
workplace and physical harassment and fear is worse, but we've focused more on the sexual harassment. Maybe it's not worse, but it's equal. And I was surprised that people were kind of. They were saying, well, he didn't do no sexual harassment? No.
Yeah, well, I knew that was just people trying to, like, make it look not so bad. So.
By the way, the talk that Tom Tully gave was basically Tom Ashbrook's Boston Globe article.
Except with Ashbrook, there were sexual allegations.
Right. But
that weren't they?
But
that was
not. Well, they weren't. Yeah, they weren't proved. You know, part of my discussion was going to be a discussion of gray areas. There's criminal, Weinstein, Cosby.
Yeah.
There's essentially civil, like Ashbrook. I mean, we're not sure he did anything, even anything illegal is alleged, but there was sexual harassment alleged.
We've had clients throw chairs at their employees.
Pardon me?
We had clients who've thrown chairs at their employees.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, okay, that would be assault.
That's just as bad.
That would be assault. But what I was getting at, there's criminal, there's civil, and then there's stupid. And this seems more to fall into the category of stupid.
But it's,
I'm not sure.
I disagree.
Wait, tell me. Which this?
It's clearly
the
federal.
Except for the Title VII issues.
Well,
being a bully, being an egotistical, narcissistic.
No, yelling at people.
Right.
That's not being narcissistic.
What I'm saying is that it wasn't illegal, necessarily.
Okay, the comments Ms. Han would be illegal under Title VII and state law.
That
the retaliation
with the
head of HR is illegal under federal law and state law.
Right.
All the other turnover if we look into it and we didn't do our exit interviews, may also have been illegal.
That's true.
And in the real world, we would have to find that out before we let you stay, you know, to see just how bad our problem is. You'd want to go a step further, because especially with higher level people.
Did he retaliate with two other HR chiefs?
Yeah.
But it really says something better than finding out about it as a board for the first time.
Right.
You know what? That happened.
How did we not know?
Did we not suspect it all along?
According to the case study, no. First we knew about it was.
We should have the CFO present to the board occasionally, because then we would have noticed that there were four CFOs in 2 years.
So we don't have financial.
Well, part of it being, we're always hearing from Tom that they're.
Let me do a survey among those of you who are on boards of directors. Of those of you who are on boards of directors, how many of you ever look at Glassdoor.com for your, or bring it up as an issue? I mean, what is the board's responsibility for establishing the culture of the company versus the CEO's responsibility for establishing the culture? And how do you measure culture, and how do you hold a CEO accountable for culture? That's really a part of what this case is getting to. I'll give you a vignette from very early in my career that's always stayed with me. I was with a global executive compensation consulting firm, and we were looking at public technology companies in a certain sector, let's say software. And we were looking at, let's say, $1 billion and higher, and only public companies. And we had the computer data, we could go into the 10-Ks, and we could look at every VP, every name of every employee, and we just counted how many women VPs there were in this data set. And at the time we did it, very few companies had women VPs, but a few companies did. And then we looked at the compensation, the CEO's compensation package, and was there a correlation? Not surprisingly, there was a very strong correlation between the percent of bonus that was assigned to promotion of women and the number of women who were in VP roles. What was very interesting about the study is what the actual percentage could be very small. Could be 2 or 3% of bonuses based on this. But just because it was in the comp package,
it made a difference.
It got the CEO's attention and it made a difference. If you don't put it in the comp package, it's simply a nice idea. It's a nice value. Absolutely. Let's go have a drink. Let's play golf.
What gets measured gets done.
And, but if it's 2% of bonus, and I look at myself as my mission is to increase my personal wealth, and if by 2% I can, you know, check the box and get this, I'm going to do it. So one of the lessons that I learned, and one of the things you said in your feedback to Tom that I really want to emphasize, was you're not only going to expect him to change, but you're also going to make sure that the compensation system reflects that change. And that